University kicks off a new suicide and health education program.
We head down to the farm for a look at where it all began for the university.
And we hear from the father of a constitution. All of that and more coming up. TERP Weekly Edition starts now.
This is TERP Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. TERP Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Hello and welcome to TERP Weekly Edition. I'm Sherry Udkoff.
And I'm Ross Masco. In September, TERP Weekly Edition told you why birth control prices were going up on campus. Now there might be a hope for students who are currently paying more than $50 a month for their contraceptives. The Deficit Reduction Act of 2005 ended the price breaks pharmaceutical companies give to college clinics. A new bill in Congress would reinstate those discounts. Sexual Health Programs Coordinator Allie Mattson is optimistic, but says it's still too early for the bill.
We don't know if it's going to go back to the original pricing, if it's going to be scaled back from what it is, if it's going to be somewhere in the middle. So we're hopeful that something will be passed that will enable the students to go back to a lower cost of birth control, but we just don't know what's going to happen.
The Prevention Through Affordable Access Act currently has more than 100 co-sponsors from both sides of the aisle. The bill's author, Joe Crowley of New York, says he hopes it will come to a vote before the end of the year.
It's time to quit. No ifs, ands, or buts. Cigarette butts, that is. Last Thursday was the 31st annual Great American Smokeout, a day promoted by the American Cancer Society to get people to quit smoking for 24 hours, and hopefully for good. TERP Weekly Edition's Kim Kaplan hit the street to find out how it went.
Did you hear about the Great American Smokeout? If you didn't, you're not alone. I asked smokers if they were participating in the smokeout, and they all shared almost the same response.
What is that?
The Great American Smokeout, sponsored by the American Cancer Society, is part of the Great American Health Challenge, a year-round initiative that encourages Americans to adopt healthy lifestyles to reduce their risk of cancer. Last Thursday, smokers were urged to take the first steps to embark on a personal plan to quit by going smoke-free for 24 hours. Once the day's purpose was explained to him, Eric Higgins, who considers himself a social smoker, said he thinks that 24 hours is too short a period to get the message across to smokers who'll just light up again the next day.
I think it would take something more drastic to stop people from smoking, like just not selling cigarettes anymore. Seriously, I think anything else, they'd still have too much choice in it and they'll just choose to keep on smoking.
Many other students on campus seem to share the view that it takes more than a 24-hour smokeout to convince people to put their cigarettes out for good. Megan Daly is one of them.
I think it's a good idea, but in the end, I'm not sure how it would work very well and be very effective because people that smoke, it's an addiction. Like, stopping for 24 hours is not going to make them stop for good.
Despite this, Daly, who's a non-smoker, still got in on the spirit of the day.
I wore my Kiss Me, I'm Smoke-Free sticker that a friend got for me from the health center because I think it's important to advertise that and to show people that it's a healthy lifestyle.
The Great American Smokeout has been held every year since 1977. The American Cancer Society says smoking is responsible for 1 in 3 cancer deaths and in 1 in 5 deaths from all causes. In College Park, I'm Kim Kaplan for TERP Weekly Edition.
Two men were taken to the hospital last week after they were robbed in the stairs of a Knox Road apartment building when they were approached from behind by 3 suspects. One suspect drew a handgun, another a knife, and the third a crowbar. The suspects demanded the victims hand over their money and then struck 2 of the victims with the crowbar. The victims were taken to a nearby hospital, but police say their injuries were not life-threatening.
And just one day later, a student was robbed at gunpoint outside the Courtyard's apartment complex. Police say the victim was walking around 7 p.m. on Greenmead Drive towards the Courtyards when a car pulled up next to him. A man got out and held a black handgun to the student. Police say another man also exited the car and demanded the student's jacket, wallet, and cell phone. Police say if you have any information about this robbery or any other crime, contact the University of Maryland Police.
Safety in and around College Park is a growing concern for many students, and some want to take matters into their own hands. A group of students is working towards forming their own National Rifle Association group. TERP Weekly Edition's Susan Frentz talked to one member about their goals.
Weighing the safety of the public with the ability to protect yourself can be a tough task, especially when crime is right in your neighborhood. Students like junior Mark Lomaskin believe that carrying a gun could help make a difference.
Honestly, after Virginia Tech happened, I was like really afraid. I think I would have felt much safer if I could have carried a gun, but it's a really tough call.
Lemaskin is a member of the newly formed College Park chapter of the National Rifle Association. While the group is not yet recognized by the university and is still in its beginning stages, Lemaskin hopes it will grow.
As far as being a campus group, it's like an awareness type of thing and getting people who already have these interests together.
He adds that awareness is just one way to change people's misconceptions about guns. Another is to let people try out shooting at a range.
I, for example, would be happy to take out anyone who is interested. I know a lot of gun owners feel the same way because we want to change popular opinion of it to show that it's not as evil as people seem to think it is.
But Lemaskin says not every gun control law is a bad one, and he's torn between the freedom to protect himself with a gun and the potential harm guns could cause on a college campus.
I mean, on the one hand, I would like to myself, but I don't know that I would want a bunch of, like, rowdy college kids carrying guns.
The University Code of Student Conduct prohibits unauthorized use, possession, or storage of any weapon on university premises or at university-sponsored activities. Many off-campus apartments, such as University View, have policies prohibiting storage of firearms as well. But Lemaskin says that areas with more lenient right-to-carry laws see significant drops in crime. However, other students aren't convinced that guns are the answer.
If students carrying guns, what happens if they come into an altercation with someone else? They're going to pull out the gun and probably shoot the person.
When you introduce weapons into any equation, there's just more chance of getting someone getting hurt.
Any little like miscommunication between two people would cause somebody to pull it out and cause more crime.
With or without weapons on campus, Lemaskin says the group will continue to work to raise awareness about guns. In College Park, I'm Susan Frantz, TERP Weekly Edition.
Coming up, a new housing option throws separating the boys from the girls out the window. Some university students get in the holiday spirit, and we take you on a trip to the local tattoo parlor. Stay with us. This is TERP Weekly Edition.
Diversity has been a key word at the University of Maryland this year, but a meeting of Maryland's higher education elite last week in Baltimore proved there's still a long way to go in achieving that goal. The group took a look at the gaps in both access to and performance in higher education. Those gaps are significant along social and racial lines. Over 70% of white students that attended colleges in the University of Maryland's system since 1989 have graduated in 6 years. During that same time, between 40 and 50% of black students have graduated in 6 years. The same comparison can be made between students from high-income backgrounds and those of low-income backgrounds. The University System of Maryland has adopted Access to Success, a nationwide program to help close those achievement gaps.
The Residence Hall Association has voted to endorse doubling up 35 courtyard two-bedroom suites, turning them into four-person apartments. The change could alleviate some of the housing crunch. The best thing about it? Rent prices will be lowered from the $717. No indication just yet as to how much students will save. The idea of doubling rooms at courtyards was presented by the Department of Resident Life at a forum held a couple weeks ago.
Co-ed dorms are nothing new on campus, but could mixed-sex housing be on its way? Resident Life held some informational meetings last week to get input and feedback about possible mixed-gender apartments. ResLife started looking into the possibility after the RHA conducted a survey in which a majority of on-campus students said they would like the option of living with the opposite sex. The pilot program will begin next fall. Participating apartments will be in the commons and courtyard complexes.
Chickens, pigs, horses, oh my! The farm awakens early in the morning. Where, you might ask? Right here on campus. The university's farm is a throwback to an earlier time on this campus. Placed neatly between the dorms, science laboratories, and the behemoth of the Comcast Center, the farm represents the reason why this university exists. TERP Weekly Edition's Ronaldo Calvello got up with the roosters recently to find out what life is like down on the farm.
This is the chicken's pen at the farm, where they study breeding and how environment impacts fertility. And keeping that study going has not been easy. Campus farm manager Lindsay Callahan says they've had to fight back to keep projects like this going on their 5 acres of land.
One idea was that they wanted to straighten Regent's Drive, which is the row that we're on, from the M, so it would be a straight shot to Comcast so you could see it. But that goes right through the farm, so over my dead body. All right, we've been here, we were here first. We're the reason this school exists.
Callahan says this link to the past still provides an eye to the future.
The reason that this is nice is the Animal Science Building is right there across the street. So for laboratory periods, which they use every day on the farm, the students leave out of their classroom, they walk across the street, and they're here at their lab.
Over at the stables, Bolsar the horse thinks breakfast is coming a little late. The horses get their feed first, a wet mix of grains. Just think of it as your favorite meal at your favorite restaurant. To finish the meal off, a bale of hay for each horse. A good amount of food, but these horses are active every day. That's why a farrier, a specialized blacksmith that makes and changes horseshoes, is here every 5 weeks instead of the normal 8. Mike Poe explains how he started his own business.
Well, I used to work cattle when I went to college, and a friend of mine kind of got me into shoeing horses, and it came to me pretty naturally, so I stuck with it. This is all I do every day.
Soon after the horses were settled, the cows, sheep, and pigs were next. Lucy, one of the cows on the farm, tries out for the next American Idol and shows a great personality. Or was it because she was hungry?
These are what are called Holsteins. That's the breed that they are. And they are milk cows. These two girls are dry, though, which means they do not milk, they're not lactating. Their main purpose is to teach the students here.
On Ag Day, an 80-year tradition that's held on the same day as Maryland Day, a popular attraction is the cows with the holes in their sides. Don't worry, it's all in the name of science. The cows aren't harmed in any way. It's to give students an inside look at a cow's digestive system.
They go through a surgery and they actually cut a hole in their side. They pull out a part of the rumen, cut a hole in that, and suture that to the outside wall of their body. So it's just one big access way.
Life on the University of Maryland farm, with its sheep, cows, horses, and chickens, it's a different world, a place where you can get lost in another time. But it's here where it all began, and it remains a shrinking link to the university's past. I'm Ronaldo Calvello, reporting for Terp Weekly Edition.
Now, from feeding animals to feeding our fellow man, one group on campus is making sure that the Prince George's County homeless aren't forgotten this holiday season. Eta Sigma Gamma, the National Health Education Honor Society, gathered clothing and canned and dried food last week on campus. Undergraduate president of ESG, Jackie Sweeney, says that the turnout was better than she expected.
We took the recycling trash boxes on campus that size and we wrapped those. Hopefully 10 of those with clothing, and we got computer-sized boxes for the food, and I'd probably say probably about 7 of those, if not more.
Boxes were set up in the main office of each School of Public Health Department in HHP. Items included winter coats, pants, and jackets, as well as dried pasta and canned vegetables and beans. The items were handed out in the city of Seat Pleasant this week.
Everybody has their own idea when it comes to body art. For some, it starts with a few earrings or unusual hair colors and hairstyles. But for others, it's a tattoo, some small, some large. A study recently found that nearly one in every four people in the U.S. has a tattoo. For many of us, the world inside a tattoo parlor is a mystery. But to those who live in that world, it's a profession that takes pride in its artistry. Last week, Terp Weekly Edition's Carrie Dandino looked at the reasons why someone would get a tattoo. This week, in part two of her special report, she gets under the skin of a local tattoo parlor.
The door for Curious Tattoo Incorporated is easy to miss in the strip of sub shops and nightclubs along Route 1 in College Park. If you manage to find it and follow the signs up the stairs to the second floor parlor, you'll find a waiting room full of tattoo designs and oftentimes full of customers. Behind the counter, Mark Manning was almost done getting his first tattoo.
A ball and chain with a human form in the ball.
Why'd you settle that?
It's pretty dynamic, just kind of hard to explain, but for passerbys, I just tell them that it represents the limitations of, like, my consciousness.
Tattoo artist John Roberts, known as John Boy, explained how to give a tattoo.
Basically taking the black ink, diluting it with water, and then depending on the depth of the needle and how fast I move it, it's going to determine what kind of color is going in the skin, like what the depth of the shading that I put in.
Owner Paul Keplinger opened Curious Tattoo back in 2003. Keplinger had been doing tattoos for 12 years when the opportunity arose to start his own business.
I kind of just jumped in. The main thing was, you know, making sure I could get a business license, use an occupancy license, because there is a lot of prejudice you know, when people think about tattoo parlors, they have all kinds of negative connotations.
There are very few regulations for tattoo parlors in Maryland. Keplinger says he follows the policies established by the Alliance of Professional Tattooists.
All of our needles are single use, and they're still autoclave sterilized, which is hospital sterilization.
After about 3 hours of work, Mark Manning's tattoo was finally finished.
The idea I had in my head, you know, and then having it actually come to life, and to see the little details that he adds into it, his little point of view on it, I like it.
Manning is now among the almost 40% of Americans under the age of 29 with a tattoo. I'm Carrie Dandino, Terp Weekly Edition, College Park.
Next on Terp Weekly Edition, some unusual study abroad experiences, a new viewpoint on the U.S. occupation in Iraq, and a Maryland football promotion leaves a local pizza joint asking customers, would you like a little pizza with your toppings? That and more coming up. Stay with us. You're listening to Terp Weekly Edition.
Without opinions when it comes to the U.S. and its role and occupation in Iraq. Dr. Dalia Wasfi is certainly one, but she has an unusual perspective. Her father is Iraqi, her mother Jewish. Wasfi says the U.S. needs to make an unconditional withdrawal, and she made her case on campus last week in a lecture room packed with students and representatives from the organization Veterans Against the Iraq War. I attended her lecture, which was sponsored by Peace Forum, Feminism Without Borders, the International Socialist Organization, and Students for a Democratic Society.
As Mark Twain said, the truth shall set you free, but first it will make you uncomfortable.
Dr. Dalia Wasfi warns the audience that the images she shows in her lectures do not resemble the type of pictures we are used to seeing in the news.
I am showing graphic images tonight. They are the reality of occupation. The American soldiers don't get an edited version. The Iraqi people don't get an edited version. Iraqi children don't get an edited version. We get the sanitized version on mainstream corporate media. So in my mind, when enough Americans see the ground truth, our policies will change.
Wasfi says, since the U.S. has been in Iraq, we have not given the Iraqi people the security they were promised.
March 18th, there was security in Iraq. Today, it continues to decline so that people are terrified. 92% of Iraqis believe they will die in the violence at any time.
Wasfi encourages the audience to consider the human consequences of war.
When we're thinking, when we do our saber-rattling towards Iran or Syria or whoever else is on our radar, don't think of it as, should we bomb them? Think of it as how it will really be with the nature of modern warfare. Shall we go rape and pillage the women and children of that society over there?
Tim Burt, member of Peace Forum, one of the organizations responsible for bringing Wasfi to campus, says he was pleased with the turnout for the lecture.
I think the majority of this campus is definitely against the war, so I'm glad that people are taking the initiative to come out and educate themselves to get Dalia's perspective on the occupation.
Dr. Wasfi spent her early childhood in Iraq under Saddam Hussein's rule. She returned with her family to the U.S. in 1977. She returned to Iraq in 2004 to visit family that was left behind.
Many of us spend our summers doing odd jobs and relaxing on the couch. But for one professor, summers can be a time to help make a difference. Terp Weekly Edition's Eric Schaefer has the story of an instructor who used one recent summer to help write a constitution for a region of Iraq known as one of the most violent areas in the Middle East, an experience he's now sharing with others.
Back in 2005, history professor Carol Zoltant was ready to kick back for a nice summer vacation.
My original summer plans was a careful balance between mountain and beach vacation, as negotiated with my wife.
But in one phone call, it was replaced with the desert of Kurdistan to help the Kurds of Iraq write their constitution. The goal of the constitution? The region would become an independent state. Getting there was the tough part. On the way in, Zoltant and his associates had a possible cross encounter with an insurgent.
And at one point, I see a car coming from the side street, coming really fast, as if it wasn't going to stop at the stop sign. And I thought, oh, that's interesting, then maybe this is it. But then, at the last moment, they just, screeched to a halt, just, avoiding us. Who knows, maybe they're just a lousy driver, but another possibility is that they saw that there were these, 15 Peshmerga driving behind us and decided it wasn't worth it.
But getting into the Iraqi capital, Baghdad, was tougher. Here's how he described getting into Baghdad from the airport.
Checkpoint, checkpoint, go through a canyon of protected street, dash across a round point, across a bridge, and then checkpoint, checkpoint, you enter the green zone, checkpoint, checkpoint, because of different degrees of greenness as you enter into more and more secure areas.
Once in the green zone, Zoltan talked with President Jalal Talabani about Kurdistan's constitution and other things.
Mostly the discussion other than, you know, the quality of food. Excellent Baghdad-style fried fish, I recommend.
After being in Iraq, Zoltan says the best course for the country is to break it into three regions, with Baghdad as the central government. Zoltan said this option is gaining popularity in the United States.
And it looks to me like people are sort of being resigned. Oh, you know, we can't have anything better, so at least maybe we can get that and get out. I actually think it's not a bad way to go.
When I asked him if he would ever go back to Iraq with his family, Zoltan said yes, but not for a long, long time. For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Eric Schaefer in College Park.
A group of students from all walks of life described their study abroad experiences Thursday at a panel sponsored by the Study Abroad Office. Maryland offers programs in more than 80 countries. Students can study in classrooms around the world for a year, a semester, or a summer, or they can go for something a bit more unconventional.
I was in a tent for about 2 weeks, and I was also, I stayed in a village for about a week in the Amazon.
Senior Dominique Futz had never even been camping before her summer in the Brazilian jungle. She says students who've never left the U.S. shouldn't be afraid to challenge themselves overseas.
The fact that you have to question whether or not you can do it is a reason to go. I've never felt more confident, and I'm more independent. Just being with different groups of people that aren't similar to me was a huge experience, and that I had to adjust, but it was worth it. It was worth it.
The new 2008 Summer Study Abroad programs will be posted on the Study Abroad Office's website next month.
For the past 2 weeks, Terp Weekly Edition reporter Nkechi Mogeku has taken us inside the lives of Maryland students who come from countries where war is a regular part of life. She's told us about their challenges. This week, in the final part of her special series, Nkechi tells us that these students also face some difficult choices when their college years are over.
You have to feed off another person's culture in order for you to grow. When they come here, they have this ambition. Like, they can't stop. You have to understand them. When you come to America, this is the big goal part.
Amal Atiyu from Sudan and Emmanuel Thompson from Sierra Leone have both come to the conclusion that education is the one thing they'd like to give back to their countries. Amal plans on returning home with a project called Friends of Sudan.
Trying to help school children build high school in southern Sudan.
Emmanuel Thompson has a similar plan for Sierra Leone after he graduates.
Trying to attain a PhD. Once I get my PhD, my intention is to go back to my country. Want to work in the educational system over there.
But wait, there's more.
And then later on in my life, I might end up with politics, hopefully become president of somewhere one day. It could be Sierra Leone. I might even become president of United States. If I decide to naturalize myself, and due to my influence, they can change the system and the law to accommodate me.
One wonders if that ever materializes. But what does seem realistic is the fact that diversity of the university is not just part of a statistic. We are embedded with living and breathing history, and we don't even know it. Next time you see someone that's different from you, ask for a name and where they're from. You'll be surprised what you could learn from a simple conversation. For Terp Weekly Edition, this is Nkechi Mogeku.
The Terps upset victory over number 8 Boston College a week ago, evened their record at 5-5, and kept their bowl chances alive. But the 5 touchdowns they scored led to a busy night for a local restaurant. Papa John's on College Avenue offers a Tuesday special of a free topping on a large pizza for every touchdown the Terps score. If the Terps win, the toppings double. The 5 touchdowns Maryland scored in their win against BC meant 10 free toppings. Papa John's assistant manager, George Nolasco, was working on Tuesday night.
Tuesdays in general, it's one of the busiest days. When the Terps win, we get slammed.
Papa John's also struggled to keep up with the demand for toppings.
We ran through about 60 pounds of pepperoni, 30, 40 pounds of sausage, bacon. It's pretty busy that day. We went through a lot of toppings.
Juniors Mike Sotak and Scott Weinberg take advantage of the special every week. but got extra creative with their pizza toppings after the big win.
Pepperoni, there's some Italian sausage on there.
Regular sausage, ham.
You always get your onions.
Bacon, peppers.
Ooh, there were some peppers this time.
Maybe mushrooms.
While the toppings made for an extreme pizza, it wasn't the easiest thing to eat.
It was heavy. It was hard to pick up. Stuff was falling everywhere, you know. It was a mess, but it was worth it.
It was harder to get everyone else away from the pizza.
Even with the added customers and toppings, Nolasco says he doesn't mind making a lot of pizzas.
It's cool. It's enjoyable to me. It makes my shift go by a lot quicker. I'd rather be doing a bunch of stuff than just sitting here waiting for 11 o'clock to hit. Time went by real fast, and it was cool.
Sotak and Weinberg say they reserve Tuesday nights for Papa John's, hoping to score big with toppings. This Tuesday, they'll have to settle for just one freebie on top of that pizza. The Terps scored only a single touchdown in their 24-16 loss to Florida State this past Saturday. But the team's bowl hopes are still alive, and so too is the possibility of another big topping Tuesday night at Papa John's, following next week's game at North Carolina.
That's all for this week's Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Ross Masco.
And I'm Shira Yudkoff. We'll be off next week for the holiday break, but join us again in 2 weeks for more stories from in and around College Park. If you'd like to hear more Terp Weekly Edition, check out the website at www.twe.umd.edu. Thanks for listening.
This has been Terp Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. We'll be taking off for the university break, but please join us again after classes resume for another look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park.